This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a cinematic look at the life of the late eccentric piano prince of New Orleans, spirited Halloween second-line festivities, or a foot-stomping, finger-snapping musical based on classic songs by Stevie Wonder, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack.
We have a quote in the film. Dr. John describes James Booker as the best black, gay, one-eyed piano wizard New Orleans has ever produced.
Filmmaker Lily Kieber talking about her documentary, Bayou Maharaja. She joins us now. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you so much for having me.
What was your first introduction to James Booker?
The first time I heard James Booker, I was working down at Vaughn's Lounge, and I heard him on the jukebox. You know, I'd go through and play the jukebox, you know, when times were slow. And, you know, when his music came on, people just perk up. You know, people would perk up and start telling stories. And just to make matters more confusing, there's a stuffed deer head, a taxidermy deer head at Vaughn's that has an eye patch. So people would be pointing at the deer and telling these outrageous stories while this totally confusing music was playing. And to me, I was like, who is this guy that they're talking about? You know, and James Booker's the type of character that the more I learned about him, I felt like the less I knew. He's confusing and funny and complicated. So that's when I thought, you know, this guy really should have a film.
Down the road, whoa, come on, y'all, co-partner right now. Down the road, oh, come a jungle partner.
The first kind of stories you hear about James Booker are the more bizarre ones. You know, him throwing up on a piano or showing up dressed as a cop or getting arrested for impersonating a cop. But then you start to hear his music and it's just a whole nother level. You know, honestly, I think often of that film Amadeus, you know, where like Mozart was so crazy, but at the end of the day, the music was so intense. And I really actually draw a lot of parallels between the two.
So tell me, how do you tell the story?
Well, that is a very good question. You know, it was something we really struggled with in editing this film is how do you tell a logical story about an illogical character or, you know, tell a story about a man who is so mysterious without sort of choking out that mystery. I interviewed over 60 people for the film, and I found that James Booker was different to each one of those. He's a very multifaceted character. He was very highly intelligent. And, you know, so I felt like I had to interview enough people to get a sense, for me, you know, because I never met him, to get a sense of who he was as a person, and then, you know, use that understanding to then help open up his music to people who don't know him already. So we structured the film like Booker might structure one of his gigs. You know, Booker was known for his medleys. When he sat down at the piano and you could get him to play, you had no idea what was going to come out. You know, he could start with a Fats Domino song and then go into gospel or go into Rachmaninoff or, you know, go into some Elvis thing he had just heard on the radio the day before. So we tried to structure the film with that same sort of Booker logic, you know, leading from one thought to the next. The film is not chronological. You know, it doesn't start at the beginning and end at the end. My hope is that by the end of the film, you'll have a sense of this very complicated person while still acknowledging that he's very complicated.
Is there a lot of dialogue, or do you do this through the music?
I feel very, very lucky, very blessed that I could almost start with the soundtrack first and, you know, let the soundtrack dictate the film instead of vice versa. The film is definitely interviews with people that I did, and then it's a lot of archival footage of New Orleans. That's another thing, is the film is about James Booker, but it's just as much about New Orleans. You know, you can't talk about one without talking about the other. So we have a lot of archival footage of New Orleans from the 70s and early 80s to sort of set the tone of that, and then with the music underneath. It's a very atmospheric film, and I'm not going to lie, you know, it's a film that really requires something of the viewer. You know, it requires you to be able to go there emotionally with his music. You know, and I'm really looking forward to the premiere on Thursday to see what New Orleanians are going to think, you know. I'm not from the city, you know. So I've shown the film at South by Southwest and at the Lincoln Center and all over the country, but this is the screening that I'm most, you know, looking forward to and also most nervous about, because it's New Orleanians that will know whether or not I've done my job correctly.
Where are you from and how did you come to New Orleans?
I was born and raised in North Carolina in the mountains. I always say that Louisiana would be perfect if it had a mountain or two. And then I went to college in Georgia. And I came to New Orleans because I fell in love with New Orleans. You know, when I first came down to visit, as Dr. John said, you know, it was a familiar reality. You know, just something about the city clicked. And I knew I always wanted to move down here. And then after the storm, I just felt like if I was going to do it, I had to do it. You know, the future of the city seemed so uncertain. I was like, all right. So I just packed my stuff into my truck and moved down, having no plan at all and no money saved up. you know, but New Orleans is the kind of city, I think, that allows that.
And you want to keep James Booker's memory alive because?
He is one of America's greatest musicians. I find him personally very inspiring. You know, it's sometimes hard to, you know, hear the story of a junkie and find that inspiring. And yet, with James Booker, somehow it works. You know, I feel like that even if people aren't interested in his music, that just his personality is strong enough that people can find something not only that's interesting, but inspiring in him. Booker was a child prodigy, but in addition to playing this very particular New Orleans style of piano, he also was classically trained and excelled in classical music. So he could combine that classical approach with this, you know, New Orleans funk, you know, je ne sais quoi thing that we do here, but then also just add something that no one else who's ever played that instrument has done before. I'm not a musician, you know, so honestly, I really relied on piano players in this city to break down his style for me. And it's one thing we do in the film. I have Harry Connick Jr. break down what Booker's doing, essentially finger by finger, so that for someone who doesn't, you know, who can't just pick it out, they can understand that this really is piano playing on the level of Beethoven, on the level of Chopin. It's not background music. You have to be willing to sit and take in that music. And I think that that's also why James Booker, on one hand, is not for everyone. It's not easy listening. But at the same time, I feel like New Orleans is kind of that same way. You have to be willing to come to the city and engage it on its own terms, you know? And I feel like that, you know, James Booker is kind of the same way.
Lily Kieber, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Lily Kieber's Bayou Maharaja, an in-depth documentary on the life of New Orleans piano wizard James Booker, will close the New Orleans Film Festival, screening Thursday at the Civic Theater. Tickets are still available for a recently added Lanyap screening at 10:15 p.m.
Ever come to my house again, knock up on the door. Somebody's gonna tell you, baby, not to ever come back no more. Shit, I know.
You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Well, it's October, temperatures are getting a little cooler, and it's time to get your harvest on, pumpkins and satsumas, as the 5th annual Boo Carré Halloween and Harvest Festival in and around the French Market kicks off this weekend. And joining me now to talk about it all is Amy Kirk, Marketing Director of the French Market. Amy, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Diane. Hello.
Boo Carré, this is the Halloween event for kids?
It is. It's a daytime event, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., daytime, daylight, Halloween, trick-or-treating throughout the French Market District. Kids can pick up a free Boo Carré trick-or-treat bag. It's a nice black and orange bag that has this cool pumpkin logo with a fleur-de-lis on it, our Boo Carré logo. Then they get a sheet that tells them where they can trick-or-treat in our stores, in our restaurants, and at the farmer's market. We'll have some booths in Dutch Alley with some neat tattoos and masks and make your own paper bag hats and necklaces, even decorate your own second line hanky with the pumpkin design. So we've got these neat Halloween and Harvest craft booths that kids can make and take their own stuff. That kind of adds to the trick-or-treating. It's not just getting candy. There'll be a pie eating contest for kids and for grown-ups. We'll have one back-to-back at the farmer's market where participants can eat some freshly made, he's going to bake them that morning for us, Loretta's son at Loretta's Pralines, sweet potato pies. And there will be a petting zoo. Believe it or not, we managed to have a petting zoo right there in the French Quarter in Dutch Alley. It's perfect for that. Lots of hay, also photo booths, miniature golf, and plenty of live music. We've got some neat country folk singers, Lynn Drury, Kelsey May, and then we also have one of our favorites, Jeanette Downing, who comes regularly for our kids' events.
Now, I understand that there is also a unique second line.
Yes, we're excited to have two. We decided to start the day and end the day with a spooky second line this year. We have a 10 a.m. spooky second line, a little bit quieter, more mellow, acoustic, as opposed to a brass band. It's going to be a violin, mandolin, and accordion trio. They'll be dressed as skeletons. Carl Mack Productions does a great job of compiling this little spooky group for us. And we'll have a few other costumed characters. Of course, we hope we have the public in costume as well to join us. We usually start across from Jackson Square at Washington Artillery Park and go all the way through to the Farmers and Flea Market. And at the end of the day, we'll have a brass band with at least a dozen student stilt walkers dressed in orange and all sorts of great Halloween costumes from the International School. They have a circus arts program, and they come every year for this and are part of our kind of grand finale. Yeah, they're hard to miss. You'll see at least a dozen kids on stilts walking through the market to kind of close out Bucure.
A family-friendly Halloween celebration.
Yes.
Now, orange is a big focus at Bucure and the Harvest Festival.
Yes.
And you're celebrating orange flesh produce.
Yes, we are. Satsumas.
Yes.
Satsumas, as you know, come into all their glory towards the end of October, and we're having this event on October 20th to celebrate our beloved orange fruit, because most pumpkins aren't really grown in Louisiana. It's tricky to grow them, but we sure know that we can grow satsumas well. So that's kind of the other orange produce, we like to joke, and we're finally going to give it its due. We're going to have a Satsuma peeling contest. We'll have a couple of cooking demos that involve Satsumas, including cocktails and mocktails made with some Satsuma syrup. We have our Italian pastry vendors, the Petrera sisters, making some cannolis with Satsuma and cream cheese filling. And we have a Satsuma juggling workshop with some local circus arts teachers, just ways to enjoy, love, celebrate, honor the Satsuma.
Now, for those who may not know, what exactly is a Satsuma?
It's funny, when you look it up online, they call it a Satsuma or Mandarin orange. So it's a smaller version, of course, of the orange. It's just got a different taste, just the way that you know a Creole tomato when you taste it. You know a Satsuma when you taste it. I think it deserves more recognition. We all know and love them in the fall, but I think they do probably get a little bit overshadowed by Halloween and pumpkins, and we need to remember that this is really our local produce and flourishing at that time of year.
And this is the first annual celebration of our Satsuma.
As far as we know, there hasn't been another Satsuma festival. You know, we're starting small. It's just noon to four.
So Saturday, it's the Bucure Halloween Festival. And then on Sunday, we celebrate the Satsuma.
Exactly. It's a whole weekend of orange at the French Market.
Amy, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Amy Kirk, Marketing Director of the French Market.
They did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the Monster Mash. The zombies were heavy.
Songs in the Key of Life, a critically acclaimed work for musician Stevie Wonder, is now a staged musical, an opera, conceived by New Orleans director and playwright John Grimsley, now a resident director at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center. Luther Gray, a percussionist with Ashe, works closely with Grimsley and stopped by to talk about the production. Well, Luther, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane, for having me.
Tell me about this staged work that's based on the music of Stevie Wonder.
The Songs in the Key of Life is a brilliant theatrical adaptation of Stevie Wonder's classic album, Songs in the Key of Life. And it's done in an operatic format, which means that every word of the play is sung from the lyrics of the song. And the songs are ordered in such a way that it tells the story of a family, a mother, father, daughter, son, grandmother, and a time in their life that they're challenged as a family, that it's a time where the family can break apart or stay together. It's also the relationship between the daughter and her boyfriend and a child being conceived out of wedlock.
Tell me, which works will we hear?
We're going to hear classic songs like Isn't She Lovely, Pastime Paradise, Have a Talk with God, You're the Joy Inside My Tears, Always, As, Fingertips, Sir Duke. These are just some of the songs, to name a few.
And who's in the cast?
The grandmother's portrayed by Michaela Harrison. The mother is portrayed by Troy Bechet. The father's portrayed by Leo Jones. The daughter is an up-and-coming great singer named Suze Goddard. The boyfriend is Daniel Simpson, and the son is Gabriel Allen, and the musical director, Leah Chase.
Now tell me, how did John conceive this work?
Oh, I'd say more than 10 years ago, and I think the first two performances of this piece were done on the East Coast, in Connecticut, I believe. He was just inspired by the music. He's a fan of Stevie Wonder's work. And the Songs in the Key of Life is a concept record about Stevie Wonder's own daughter being born. So I think that storyline, being John being a very creative and, you know, he's a genius as a director. So I think he saw the story just in the music and envisioned how he could bring that to a stage with a family as characters.
What is your role in the production?
Well, the only musical accompaniment to the play is percussion. John and myself act as the percussion engine underneath these songs. So there's no piano, no bass, nothing else but the songs and percussion instruments as accompaniment.
And what is the basic message?
The power of family, the nuclear family, how important a family is to their children. What's beautiful about this story, what's so sweet about it, is the father in the home and the mother and their two children and the grandmother all working together to help their daughter to have this beautiful child and then bring the boyfriend into their nuclear family. But, of course, along the way, there's conflict and there's rejection. And then at the end, there's the grandmother brings it all together. So it's a beautiful, beautiful story, very timely today. So often we hear about the absence of fathers in families and also young men who father children and not stepping up to be their fathers. And in this case, you have a father who wants to be there with his child, and they all, at the end, bring it all together. I think it's an important message all around the country. New Orleans really, I think, reflects a lot of things that are going on in the country, but the beautiful thing about New Orleans is that we have a really rich culture in order to turn our culture into messages that can inspire our people.
Did you find anything particularly challenging for you in the production?
I really had to listen to the music. And, you know, the genius of Stevie Wonder on this record, on like most of his recordings, he's playing everything. He plays the drums, all the keyboards, bass, sings all the parts and the harmonies. And his style of drumming is very unorthodox. He doesn't play like Herlin Riley's style of drums. You know, he's playing like crazy. You know, he's Stevie Wonder. He's got his own style. So how do I take his drumming style and translate it to congas, bongos, djembes, and sort of percussion? But he has a lot of percussion in his music, so it was a great challenge and a great opportunity for me to dwell deeply into this music.
All right. Luther Gray.
Thanks for having me, Ty.
Thank you. Percussionist Luther Gray, Songs in the Key of Life, a Stevie Wonder opera, conceived and directed by John Grimsley, is in final performances Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center, 1712 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, 8 p.m.
And we have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. Cry You One, an outdoor performance set at the edge of our disappearing wetlands, is part song, part story, and part procession that celebrates the people and cultures of South Louisiana while setting sight on the crisis of our vanishing coast. Performances are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday afternoons from October 26th through November 24th. Details as well as lots more information about Cry You One, our coast, what's being lost, and what's being done about it can be found at cryyouone.com. November marks the 10th anniversary of Dutch Alley Artist Co-op in the French Markets building on Dutch Alley at Dumaine Street. The gallery showcases the work of 25 regional artists and designers. As part of Dutch Alley's 10th anniversary month, the first 10 days of November will each feature a member artist who will be demonstrating their work from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. A reception will be held on November 2nd from 6 to 9 p.m. with refreshments and musical guest, the New Orleans Celtic Harp Ensemble. A number of gallery artists will be creating special edition works to commemorate the 10th anniversary. The Harvest the Music concert series presented by Chevron continues tomorrow evening, featuring the Revivalist plus Papa Molly. The Wednesday concert series in Lafayette Square benefits the Second Harvest Food Bank of New Orleans and Acadiana. The concerts run from 5 to 7:30 p.m. through October 30th. The Crescent City Blues and Barbecue Festival kicks off its 8th annual celebration in Lafayette Square Park. The free event, presented by the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, takes place this weekend, beginning Friday evening and all day Saturday and Sunday, with a host of musical acts including Johnny Lang, Shamika Copeland, Mel Waiters, and more. Info at CrescentCityBluesFest.com. The third annual NOLA East Friends Fest takes place Saturday, a day-long celebration of diversity in our community, with entertainment by the James Rivers Movement and a host of other musical artists. 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. in Joe Brown Park. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.